Please listen carefully.
Welcome to the Rick and Dodd Show. Two dudes, a podcast, and some laughs.
Prepare to be underwhelmed.
And away we go.
Sweet. Yes. So I finished the list, Rick.
So I saw you send it over to me. I didn't want to pay too much attention to the order of the games or the names on there. But I did see that there were some numbers along the way on the other parts of it. So we'll figure out what that is. I'm sure. It probably wasn't you just wiping your face on the keyboard. Yeah, so that's what I'm interested to see. What comes of this? How do you want to go through this? Do you want to go top to bottom is anticlimactic? So do you want to do it in chunks? Do a bottom to top, or what do you what do you have ideas for?
So we could do it in chunks. I figure we go. I guess obviously bottom to top. And then we could just do it in chunks. And if there's anything like crazy or anything interesting that you wanted to talk about. I guess we should probably start off with like a hard preface, since I imagine this is probably going to be the majority of the episode, since I feel like we both could kind of feel like the last two pay-per-views didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
So the way that I did this is, as you said, is there were some numbers on this side. So I was trying a few different rating systems, trying to figure out how to do like a... maybe like a point scale or rubric, and that's what those numbers are from.
Okay.
Ultimately, what I did is I just basically started going down the list and basically grouping them. I ultimately realized it was getting a little complicated. And for some reason on Google Sheets, when I would try and basically have a formula for a fill, so I haven't fucked with a spreadsheet in decades. So... for some reason I was trying to have it do the fill so it would automatically fill so I could, you know, basically constantly keep sorting it so I could see how stuff is stacking. It magically, I was having some issues with it, it was just me being stupid. And I know it was me being stupid, considering I could not, find any of the proper help solutions. So
you know that there's no section in the help to help with your problem. You know it's operator error on your end.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I basically did is I basically just started assigning things numbers and letting them group naturally that way and then spreading it out that way. I think doing it that way worked out pretty well. There's like maybe one or two games that are a little too high. But overall, I didn't feel it was worth necessarily fighting it. The other thing that I do want to mention is that unlike most of these lists that you'll come across, or especially with my idea of the Game Informer list, I actually did the math. I've played over 90% of these games on this list.
Yeah, that's what I was waiting to go through the list because you sent it a day or two ago, and I didn't want to go through it yet until we had talked about it. Because I figured it was more interesting for the show for me not to know what the order of it. But that's what I was going to go through and check off some of these. So that's what there's some of them. I even just looking at the last 10, I know I have a couple questions on which one specifically are on here. That's what I would imagine. I have a vastly lower number than you as far as games played on this list. It'll be interesting to see which ones I can kind of check off as well.
Yeah, so let me go and bring it up on the computer. Google Docs. And we'll also post this. One of the things I do want to do is, and we've talked a few times about doing the YouTube channel stuff, I do want to get that started, and this would be a really good thing to, you know, maybe in case we don't get super in-depth, because there are 300 games on here, and that's a lot. That way I could probably do a little quick something, more in depth on those. And oh, for fuck's sake, come on.
Well, even doing them in chunks or again, like going in depth, like 50 at a time, as opposed to, us trying to keep it to an episode length here, but still making it all the way through the list.
Yeah. All right.
So the first thing you'll notice is there's probably you could use the numbers on the left for the column of the spreadsheet and the numbers on the right. Who would have thought? I have a small basically like a small honorable section mention of stuff that didn't necessarily make the list. Just to go over the basic rules of the list again for any of the listeners out there who started a little later or might have skipped the last couple episodes or what have you. And you didn't have internet access and had to get their Rick and Don show fix immediately. I tried to keep it the games generally on this list are 2 years or older. There's one exception on this list that's actually turning to this month and actually next week. So I bent my own rule a little bit and put it on here. It's also not very high on the list. So in the long run, scheme of things, I don't think it really hurts anything. Second is that I tried to keep the numbers of games per series low and tried to go with the overall best one of that. Unless they basically unless the games are just so important or so significant that more of them had to be on this list,
or so different in and of the same yes. series.
Yes. Yes. So there's like a few of those. Basically there's a small honorable mentions list that that I have here. But I will say there are some series that do have more than one game, and there is basically one or two series you could probably guess that have like I think three or more entries. And that's just because of how important they've been. So the first thing I want to talk about here is the honorable mentions list that I have. I went with games that I know have been pretty fun for me. I know people have talked about. I went with a lot of games that I said if you had to play, if you had to basically play, if you're trapped at if you were going to expose someone to games, you know, video games, or if you were trapped on a desert island, these are what you're going to want to play. I tried to touch on a lot of different systems. Generally for these, the way that I've played them in their, you can roll your eyes now, but the most pure or definitive version of them, some games being arcade, some games being redefined or remastered ports for them that, or the best version of that game that's basically considered. We get these few honorable mentions out of the way. Vector Man, Cruisin' USA, Wii Sports, and Beautiful Joe. Those games didn't make the list for various reasons. The closest one to making the list there would have been Beautiful Joe, but I just couldn't find anything except one to bump it. So, with that being said, I guess we can actually start in this list. This isn't a, end all be all. These aren't, this is what isn't what society's deemed. This is, just me thinking about the games and going through my collection and what I've played and all that. So if it doesn't match your list, it's okay. all right. So I guess we can start with, you want to do them in groups of 10.
Yeah, that works.
So at number 300, we have Dragon's Lair, Animal Crossing at 299. Advanced Wars at 298, Tales of Symphonia at 297, Mutant League Hockey at 296, Spider-Man 2 for the original PlayStation at 294, Sonic Adventure DX, that'd be for the GameCube, at 293, Super Monkey Ball at 292, The Wolf Among Us at 291 on various systems. It plays exactly the same on all of them. And Erebus Supersonic for the Sega Genesis at 290.
So which Spider-Man 2 did you say that was?
It's Spider-Man 2. It's the Spider-Man 2 for the PlayStation, the original PlayStation. I felt like I had to include it on this list because I thought about it for a long time. But it's the first Spider-Man game that got the web-slinging down proper.
Is this the one that's associated with the movies, or is this a standalone, or was this another one?
This is a standalone.
Okay, because I that's one of the ones I know that came out, I want to say, around, I think it was when I was in college and possibly with the Tobey Maguire movies, the first set. And that's what I mean. They had kind of the really, they had nailed the open world web-slinging as well between Spider-Man, and then I believe the sequel was as well, so that's why I wanted to differentiate just exactly which system that was. Yes. But I know they had a good couple there. I can't remember if I actually played it on the original PlayStation or not, but that's one I'll definitely circle back on.
Yes, and did I say I might have skipped Bayonetta? I have Bayonetta 2 there at 294. I don't know if I said that.
Okay. In between Sonic Adventure and Spider-Man 2.
Yep.
Mutant League Hockey, that's for Genesis, you said? Or
that should be on Genesis.
Okay. Yeah, that was Mutant League Hockey, Mutant League Football were, and I haven't peeked to see if football's anywhere on the list, but those were some very excellent games. Gave a much more fun, ridiculous arcade twist to your sports games as opposed to just the typical, you know, NBA Jam, Wayne Gretzky's hockey type stuff. So those are there's some definite fondness there for me on those.
Yes, they're very fun. And you know, one thing you'll probably notice with this list is that it does skew a little older, because I try to keep in mind all of games, not just the last 10 or 15 years of games. There have been, I've shared this list with a couple of folks, and I've had one person say that I overvalue retro games, which, if you look at the history of things, of, you know, it'd be like looking at greatest basketball players of all times and only looking at players for the last 20 years.
Yeah, and I mean, saying that, I remembered that I'm now delinquent on my homework because I did not do any of the looking up the games lists and when they were there and kind of looking at the distribution over years for the list from Game Informer itself. But yeah, I mean, you have to look at the long tail of everything. And I mean, obviously we wouldn't be on the computers we are today if it wasn't for, you know, the big computers that need to be in an entire room for, you know, just the hard drive. So kind of doing the opposite or doing the same and kind of just eschewing the origin or the genesis of the video game industry just doesn't seem, you know, prudent or like a interesting idea.
Yeah. So I'll just talk about a couple of these and we'll go through the next 10. The first one I want to mention is Dragon's Lair. Normally, Dragon's Lair wouldn't be on a list like this. I felt like I had to include it for a few reasons. A, the game's so iconic. B, the game in itself sort of pioneered the idea of those in game similar games like Dragon's Lair sort of pioneered the idea of QuickTime events. And the fact that the fact the game is gorgeous, it's a Don Bluth animation. It's an arcade experience, and it's something that it's definitely an experience that you would want to share with others and they would have to experience it or in some way, shape, or form. Dragon's Lair doesn't usually get put on this because it can be pretty punishing. But it's a game that has to be talked about. And I recognize that, and that's why it's at number 300 here. Let's see. And if there's any other in those first 10 or those first 10 we talked about?
I've never played Super Monkey Ball, but it was one that I know was one that was super popular and was kind of really heralded as a radical game for the time when I was reading my GamePro subscriptions avidly. So that was one where it was, again, like just something I never came across, but one that I knew was kind of in the most of the mind share for a really well-developed game experience.
Yes, Super Monkey Ball is actually a game I absolutely love. I love the idea of it. If you were a kid that got distracted by Marble Madness, you will love Super Monkey Ball. It's that same strange, easy to pick up, hard to master kind of gameplay, very arcade feel, and it's just a good game by Sega. Also, you'll notice that this list, there's some Sega games. There's a few of them because we don't give Sega enough credit. So you'll notice that as we go on. The next 10 I guess I kind of skipped ahead there. So at 289, we have Dota. At 288, we have Arkham Asylum. At 287, we have Overwatch. 286, we have Incredible Crisis. 285, we have Sid Meier's Pirates. 284, we have Gone Home. At 283, we have Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay. At 282, we have Little Big Planet. At 281, we have Super Smash TV. And at 280, we have Lego Star Wars.
That'll be the full trilogy collection of that. So there's probably a couple games. I know there's definitely one game on here that a lot of folks aren't familiar with. And that's probably Incredible Crisis. The Incredible Crisis is a series of mini games where you play as a Japanese businessman that's having a very bad day. And it's for the original PlayStation. And it's absolutely hilarious.
this was available in the US?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's the other thing with this list, is that all of these games listed here, some of them are very expensive, but all of them were available in the US. There were a few games I actually did not put, I almost wanted to put on here that I didn't, because they were not available in the US, and there wouldn't have been, not that there'd be an easy way to play some of these. I wanted the list to be like, if you were a kid or something, like, you could have played one of these. And it's absolutely fun. I haven't beaten it, but I remember playing it and remember having a lot of fun with it, and I just thought it was an absolute trip. Let's see. We have Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay. Arguably, that was one of the first games where licensed movie tie-ins started to get good. And that this game shows up on a lot of lists. It's very good. And it's definitely a game folks should check out. We've talked about Gone Home.
I would hope so, since that was one of the media swaps.
Yep. And let's see.
So is Overwatch your just over the line 2 year baby?
Yep. It turns 2 years next week. Maybe this weekend. Shit. Is it? No, it's next weekend. No, this, yeah.
Yeah, because I know it's right around now, because that's when I got my Xbox One 2 years ago this birthday weekend, and then that was the first game I got for it was Overwatch, and it may have even been in a bundle. So that was, I know that it's right around this time frame. So, I mean, that's the kind of magnitude that Overwatch has had on the game market, plus a year, 11 months and 30 days is good enough.
Yeah. So, and I've been playing that one a little bit more recently. Honestly, like, I'm not terribly in love with it, but I know it has had a huge impact. And I feel out of the choose a champion, compete things, it's been more successful than it has any right to be since it was a paid property.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, are there any in that little grouping that you would want to talk about?
I mean, the only one there that you haven't touched on yet is just Arkham Asylum. I mean, I think that one was one that at the time was it set a course for a whole new style of game, or a whole different immersion experience. I mean, I don't know how many more of that series, if any, you have on the list here, but I mean, that was the one that I enjoyed the most. I've played some of the other ones here and there, but I just haven't played them all the way through. But it was something where, for somebody who's been, you know, a 30-year Batman fan, and to still get sucked into a game like that and still have cool Batman experiences that I didn't think I would be able to have in a video game, was one that was really well done. So I think it was kind of like a home run on the IP front, and then a home run on the gameplay side. So that was kind of my thought on that one.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. I remember playing it. I remember enjoying it way too much, and I had to put it on this list. I actually like that game a lot more than I like Arkham City. I like Arkham Asylum. One of the things that this game masterfully does is setting.
Mm-hmm.
This game is small, and it feels small when you play it. It's, you know, and not a lot of folks, people, Arkham City, open world, this and that. Arkham Asylum, you're trapped in a mental institution with criminals, and the game treats you like that. You, all the air vents you have to crawl through, it's tiny, it's all, the game feels it's on top of itself. It's tight and constricting like a straitjacket. And the fact that not a lot of folks see that.
And I think that's one of the things I loved about it, was that it was, the gameplay was so tight. I mean, kind of going back to some of what we talked about last week with GoldenEye and my inability to figure out some of the maps and everything. Like, I mean, having it sit on top of itself and knowing where you had to double back to certain places and figure out areas that needed to go here, there, and everywhere. Like, that was something that I took as a positive design experience and not like an underwhelming one. So that was one that I liked a lot.
Absolutely. And let's see. So, so we left off at Lego Star Wars. So at 279 we have Unreal Tournament. At 278 we have Undertale. At 277 we have Uncharted 2. At 276 we have Alex Kidd in Shinobi World. At 275 we have Zone of Enders. At 274 we have EVE Online. At 273 we have Comic Zone. And at 272, we have Tiger Woods PGA 2012. And at 271, we have Super Breakout. And 270, we have Toe Jam and Earl. It's sort of in the middle of this list, and it sort of shows here. And at the last, I guess at the first third, if we're going if you go. If you're going down, there's a lot of niche stuff in here, and a lot of very specific things. I did a lot of research for there are sports games throughout this list that I'm not too familiar with, and I did a lot of research on several polls. It turns out that Tiger Woods PGA 12 is the best golfing game that has come out, like, ever. Best realistic golfing game that's come out.
So that's not one that I've played. We pretty much were very competitive in my college apartment senior year with, I guess that was, I don't know the name or the numbering systems for some of these, and I think they're probably different than Madden. So it could have been Tiger Woods 04, Tiger Woods 05, Tiger Woods... Yeah, it had to be either 04 or 05. But between the four of us in the apartment, we basically had a career mode and went pretty apeshit on the kind of arcade career style. So much so that, like, we were actively rushing home from class to play that. And so, I mean, depending on the metrics that they're using for that, whether it's realistic or the arcade experience or career mode or whatever, I mean, that was a great series that had a lot of well done and well thought out kind of real life game to video game translation pieces. So I you know, a couple more years on that, I can see that one having the investment and the experience that, you know, folks are touting.
Yes, you know, and it's one of the things that I've noticed. It's that sports games haven't gotten, generally from the research and stuff that I've done, sports games haven't gotten better outside of the early aughts, or mid to late aughts, I should say. They've pretty much reached their pinnacle, and the only thing that's gotten better are the graphics.
I mean, I think you're definitely approaching the... motor skill / mind or, you know, human computer interface asymptote there to not be able to do that much more. So until you end up having pretty much crystal clear, as I stutter saying that, voice commands, there's not really going to be much more innovation in those sports games, and unless you're just kind of creating a whole new sport in and of itself in the game.
Yep. There's a couple games in here that folks may not be super familiar with. Let's see, Alex Kidd in Shinobi World. Generally, this game is a game that wouldn't make a lot of lists. However, for me, any one of the reasons I absolutely love a lot of Sega games is because of their humor. That game is basically making fun of itself and a shit ton of other stuff. It's making fun. It's Sega making fun of its own property in Shinobi.
Mm-hmm.
And then making fun of the Japanese version of this is the thing that pretty much spurred it on here. But it's basically all the bosses and the end bosses in this are famous heroes or famous characters from other properties.
Okay.
Like there's like one where you fight, oh my goodness. There's one, like, I think it's Spider-Man. You fight like a knockoff Spider-Man. And then, yeah, so it's just like a series, the boss fights are serious like that. And it's, you know, a short game, a lot of tongue in cheek stuff. And I had to put it on this list just because I have a soft spot for it. Let's see what else in there. Comic Zone. That's another Sega title. It's a very short game, but it's absolutely, it's hard. You get one life, and then you get one continue. But it's only technically three levels. But it's an absolutely gorgeous game. The sound is in it. It's fantastic. You play a comic book writer who gets sucked into his old comic book.
Oh, interesting.
And the game is on almost every single Sega Genesis collection that's out there. I would urge you to pick it up. It's a fantastic game. I've played it in the collection emulators. I own a copy. I've played it. It still looks just as good. It's still pain in the ass to play.
I mean, now that you say that, I'm recalling the box art for it and then seeing just advertisements for it in, you know, super old GamePro issues. So that's one that's ringing a bell as well.
Yeah. Really, a really fun game. Tough. You can head it. You can take turns playing with a buddy and just pass it back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's see here. Let's see.
Next up is 269.
Yep. At 269, we have Drill Dozer. 268, we have Bait and Kados. 267, we have Tomb Raider.
That's the original Tomb Raider on PlayStation?
Yes.
Okay.
The only game that I can play tank controls with. at 266, we have Super Mario RPG. At 265, we have Pokemon Stadium, the first one. At 264, we have Forza. I think they're, what, up to like three or four now. It's supposed to be like the first one. Okay. And then 263, we have SSX3. At 262, we have Thunder Force 3. At 261, we have UN Squadron. And at 260, we have Super Buster Bros. I mean, that's a chunk of good games. For some folks, that could actually be a top, you know, for some folks, that could actually be like a top, you know, like they're, you know, trapped on a desert island. That's what they're playing.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at a handful of those, I mean, knowing between Super Buster Brothers, SSX, Forza, Super Mario RPG, and Tomb Raider, I mean, those right there are some, you know, early on AAA games before they got into super shit tons of DLC. Yep. That are just, you know, home run, perfect blend of game controls and graphics on the respective systems where they're, you know, developers are hitting their stride and everything. So yep. There's a handful of those that are definitely, you know, some golden apples on their respective systems.
Yep. Yep. And Thunder Force 3 is a shoot 'em up. That's absolutely fantastic. I actually have a copy of this, and I left it in my car for like a year and a half before I actually ever played it, before I'd ever actually brought it in the house. And as soon as, because the label's all fucked up on it, and as soon as I brought it in the house, cleaned it up and got it to play and played it, I realized I had made a terrible mistake in not bringing it into the house. It's absolutely fantastic. It's hard as nails. It's got great music. Classic Sega Genesis shooter. we have UN Squadron, which is a shoot 'em up by Capcom. Music is killer. It's fantastic. This game was on my list. I asked our mutual friend Jim if he's played a few games, if there should be stuff I should include on here. And he mentioned this game. Like, I'd asked him like two or three different times, and he said he was like, this game would have to be on here, and I totally agree with him. It's an absolutely fantastic that I actually found game hunting and was recommended through my that was basically a blind recommendation through game hunting YouTube channels.
Oh, nice.
And it's absolutely fantastic. It's fun. It's hard as nails, but it's very good. And I would urge everyone to check. I would urge everyone to check out all of these games. But you would see their appeal and kind of see how that would all go together.
But yeah, I mean, even though it's ranked lower on the list, there's definitely going to be a handful that are still, you know, home runs / nostalgia busters there that would definitely make sense to go and check out.
Yep. Okay, so this is there's two parts. So this next part is probably the part where I'm not familiar with a lot of the stuff that I had to put in here. I'm not like I did research on it and stuff and realized through multiple recommendations that this stuff would have to go on here. I had a very hard time placing a lot of it. So at 259, we have Street Fighter Alpha 3. At 258, we have Silent Hill. At 257, we have Borderlands. At 256, we have The World Ends With You. At 255, we have TIE Fighter. I guess it's Star Wars TIE Fighter is the full title of that. At 254, we have Soul Calibur, and this should probably be Soul Calibur 2. That was on the GameCube, Xbox, and PS2. At 253, we have Skies of Arcadia. At 252, we have oh, Jesus Christ, Donald. This is supposed to be Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Yeah, we're not calling out any typos yet, so we'll fix that before the list goes up.
Yeah, at 251, we have Cruisin' Exotica. At 250, we have Paperboy. And you could technically go arcade, but I think you could go arcade, Master System. Well, technically, this should probably be the Master System version if you're going to play it on home console, because that's actually almost an arcade perfect port. But the game's pretty much the same. The only thing that changes is the obstacle course at the end. A few of these I'm not super, super familiar with, but I knew they needed to be here on the list. Every single person that I know who owns a PC has talked about the Star Wars TIE Fighter game on PC. I haven't had any firsthand experience with it, but every single person, every time I'm out thrifting, that's one of the reasons people that if the person that I'm hanging out with, they play PC, they're digging through stuff. There's like a few games that they're looking for, and that's one of them.
Yeah, that's one. I mean, when that came out and when that was still in its kind of heyday, I didn't have a computer at home, so it was one where I knew how awesome it was when we'd be with friends or anything like that. Like, that would be the place that I'd want to play, or the game that I would want to play. And just knowing how, again, just like a perfect combination of IP and gameplay, and basically the, you know, if you could take Microsoft's Flight Simulator and jam Star Wars shit into it, that's what you know, TIE Fighter was. And so that was just really well done there. Soul Calibur was one that I wasn't, you know, a huge fan of initially. I've lamented a number of times on the podcast my personal history with Dreamcast, and, you know, the unrequited love that the rest of the game market had for it. My buddy's brother had a Dreamcast as well. I borrowed the original Soul Calibur from him and then never gave it back. And was one where it was like, okay, let me just pay you for this because I don't want to get rid of it. And he's like, eventually he relented. It was like, okay. So I just fell in love with the original Soul Calibur. I played some of Soul Calibur 2, but that was just a poor timing on my end. As much as I love, you know, the Mortal Kombat series and a lot of the other stuff, there's probably never going to be as big of a highlight for me as the Soul Calibur franchise on the original Dreamcast game. So nice to see that here in a not too shabby position.
And I also had to include Cruz and Exotica. It was really tough. But the fact that I could not, I felt like I could not exclude one of the premier arcade games of the late 90s. Mm-hmm. That especially very not only nostalgic based for me, it's also a good game. It's a fantastic arcade racer where you can race against other players.
Well, I mean, that's the one where whenever we in high school, when we'd go to the movies on the weekends, I mean, that was the one that was always, you know, it had four people wide, and that was what everybody was, you know, always yep. killing time before the movies or hanging out after, before our parents picked us up. That's what we were always trying to sit down and play at.
Yep. Also on this little section, we have Skies of Arcadia. That game would be higher. If it would not be for its encounter rate, it tells the combat in that game is fantastic. However, the encounter rate is way too high.
So you're basically trudging and sludging through everything.
Yep. Yep. And apparently I played the GameCube version. I have both. So no one, you know, no haters. Hashtag thrift, hashtag thrifted them both. They're both actually pretty pricey, but, apparently, in the GameCube version, the encounter rate was lowered. So I was taking three. I couldn't imagine it had to have been on the original Dragon Warrior level of
yeah.
So, and that's that there. Oh wow, we're already down to this part. All right. So at 2:49, we have Pac-Man 2, The New Adventures of Pac-Man. At 2:48, we have Phantasy Star, and that should probably be Phantasy Star 3. At 2:47, we have Left 4 Dead. At 2:46, we have Fatal Frame. At 2:45, we have Mario Sports Mix. At 2:44, we have League of Legends. And 2:43, we have Shantae. At 2:42, we have Phoenix Wright. At 2:41, we have Tekken 3. And at 2:40, we have Ultima.
Yeah, so we have a very eclectic grouping of games here.
Yeah, this is probably one of the most eclectic group of 10 we'll probably see.
a lot of stuff that folks might necessarily be familiar with. I guess we'll probably do a couple here. Pac-Man 2 is actually a really fun, very cute adventure game where you play an an omnipresent being that terrorizes Pac-Man as he continues through life.
That actually does sound familiar now that I remember the kind of, again, yeah, setting up the world around Pac-Man and everything.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's on the Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo, both ports. There's no differences between them. Between the two, very fun, lot of charm, very easy to play, and well, it can be a little difficult, but very fun, a lot of gags, and actually a very fun official sequel to Pac-Man. Of course, we have Shantae, which you basically play as a genie, a half genie. And you turn into creatures and stuff and platform your way through challenges. Really fun. It's very expensive on the original Game Boy Color. You can find later versions of Shantae by WayForward that have been put out the last few years. And they're all very fun, very good, very colorful, a lot of charm. Definitely worth the checkout. And of course, we've got... let's see, the last one here that people probably not might be familiar with is actually the Mario Sports Mix. This game came out on Wii and 3DS. It's basically all the arcade sports of all the arcade Mario versions of sports outside of the ones that got released on that get their standalone games like tennis mm-hmm. and baseball and soccer. They have a very interesting dodgeball,
okay,
basketball setup. you know, it's a game that it took me a very long time to find. And when I found it, I was glad that I found it. It's very fun. Great way to a great pickup and play, a great little party thing, where the game has a bit more balance than a lot of the other stuff. A lot of the other more developed titles. So it's fun. It's a nice little I think there's even a hockey.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, it's all yeah. So very, I think it's very worth the checkout. And now it's a little easier to find because I think they did a reprint of it. That used to be like a $40 game. I think it's down to $20. So Wii U owners, if you have it, I would recommend checking it out. And let's see.
So on here, the one that jumps out for me is for one that I have experience with would be Tekken 3. I've made no qualms about my end all be all game being Final Fantasy VII. So taking it down to PlayStation, the original PlayStation platform, it's still going to be Final Fantasy VII. But then for me, it's probably a toss-up between another game that I hope to see on here a little bit later and Tekken 3 as the number two game. It was basically Final Fantasy VII and Tekken 3 were the games like I was disconnecting my PlayStation and taking it with me wherever I was going that weekend to be able to play it so I could keep going and playing it all the way through.
Yep.
And, you know, that was really before they had platinum trophies and everything. But I was taking that and playing that and you know, doing everything with every character and just trying to you know, master everything in the game. That's probably one of the other like fish in a barrel type games for me, where it was just a perfect timing of everything, where I had the time, the controls were super tight. They were pushing the extent of the system and there was, you know, deep characters in there that were super awesome. So that's one of my favorite looking back here. The other question I have here is just the seeing how we had Dota already. Now we've got League of Legends here. Just the overall take of the MOBA style game as it sits on this list and just kind of the overall opinion that you have for ranking some of that stuff.
Yeah. There are a few games that, like, I don't say necessarily feel pressured, but a lot of the MOBA style stuff is specifically League, Dota, and even Overwatch, because it's structured very similar, I feel, to those, that they they felt like they had to be included, but they also don't feel like completely full games either.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason they're on here is they still have the ease of sort of pick up and play with some of the entry level heroes that are easier to play in those games, or champions, or whatever you want to call them, that make the games more accessible. But the fact that some of those, you know, some of that, they're basically sort of like the modern day incarnate of like arcade games,
mm-hmm.
where you have it unlocked, you can sit there, but if you want to get anywhere in there, you have to put a lot of time and you end up putting a lot of quarters in it to get what you need to get.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't value them too highly. Because I felt like, in a way, they weren't really complete games, but they were fun. And looking at its own genre of that, just to see, they may not be completely for me, but just to see the fanaticism that people have for those games and the dedication that they have to them, I felt like they had to be included here. And that was me trying to do my best part of being impartial.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, and I think CSGO's on here too, but, and that was another one that was kind of like that too.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go for the next little batch here. At 239, we have Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. At 238, we have Ultima Online. At 2:37, we have Pro Wrestling. That's for the NES. At 2:36, we have Dead Space. At 2:35, we have Bully. At 2:34, we have DDR. At 2:33, we have Beyond Good and Evil. At 2:32, we have The Witcher 3. At 2:31, we have SimCity 2000. And at 2:30 here, we have Rocket League. Yeah, what a strange grouping of games.
No, I've never played either of them, but what is the, obviously besides the smartass answer, what is the key difference between Ultima and Ultima Online here to have them be so close together?
So Ultima Online basically takes the idea of the Ultima. This Ultima was basically, the first Ultima there is a reference to the older, like, PC games.
Mm-hmm.
And then the difference there is basically, obviously, upgrades with online and basically expanding into that world of PvP kind of, say, WoW style of gameplay, but that kind of opening up into that feel of that.
Okay.
When one can sort of be, generally there would only be one here, which would most likely just be Ultima Online, but our good buddy Jimbo actually did a decent job of convincing me to originally include Ultima on this list as well. Just because the argument of them being sort of structurally different made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see for that one. But I'm also not too familiar with them either. And that's the other reason why they're kind of close together too. Is that they're, I'm not like super familiar with them. So that's why they're there. And that's why, I mean, they could be fantastic, but I, you know, it's Ultima Online. There's a lot of those. there's a lot of that style of game here. On this list that also has that same level of fanaticism as the MOBAs. let's see, we have... of course, we had to include Bully and DDR. Bully, which is basically Grand Theft Auto Lite.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I mean, like I had mentioned last time, that's when I didn't play. I knew it was like heavily... marketed by Rockstar and everything, but one that I had never picked up. So I was just interested to see the uniqueness or kind of what credit it actually deserved to make it onto the list.
So apparently the game has a ton of charm for it because it is set in a school, and it has a lot of charm. And I've gone through so many of this list, and I did a lot of research. I did a lot of research on this. The definitive version of this game is actually, as of right now, I believe is on the Xbox 360. And this game still demands a premium price-wise. Mm-hmm. I want to say it's still like $30 on the 360. And the game's been out for 15 years, but it's been out for at least 10 years. For a game to have that kind of staying power, and it's not just nostalgia for that, there has to be successful gameplay elements there. And the fact that it's not as necessarily as grotesque as GTA,
yeah,
violence wise, that probably helps a lot of that. That charm with it too. Of course, we had to include DDR.
Now, is that the first of a genre, or is that just the one to finally take off?
That's probably the one, and it's going to be most likely, I think I've played a few DDR games. It most likely, the arcade experience is not the same as the home. At home, it just feels, it makes you feel sad a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's because the home mats don't have the same feedback. Yes, I know you can get like the actual full size metal mat, metal dance pads.
But just cumbersome.
I'm not spending $200 on a dance pad.
Yeah.
So it'd be the arcade version, and it probably would be the first one. Folks that are more into DDR could probably tell me which one that would be. But for the ones that I've played, I played the ones on the original Xbox, and they all were functionally the same game.
Okay.
At least from what I saw, like, they were all functionally the same game, and if the only thing that was different were the songs, then it's just the first one. Like, that's like, oh, I like the Beatles. Which album is their, you know, I don't, maybe I shouldn't use the Beatles, but I like a band. Which album is the best? And they're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
The one that's probably going to get a lot of slack here is probably The Witcher 3. This game was very high on the Game Informer list, and a lot of folks like it, and feel like it's very good. It's just an open world game set in a fantasy land.
Nothing super fancy, super innovative. It's got some good pixels on there, but a good story, yeah. But not, you know, anything exactly. Ground shattering.
Exactly. You know, a lot of folks like it because it might be, I don't know if we've talked about it a lot, but I'm not like super into fantasy. And especially, fantasy that takes place in alternate universes that are very medieval in nature. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fine. I've seen gameplay of it. I've seen it. You know, not super. I wasn't super into it. I know a lot of people are.
No, see, I love that genre, which is why Final Fantasy appeals so much to me, but it's also one that just hasn't been on my radar, or one that I haven't, you know, touched or turned any sort of attention to whatsoever, so.
Yeah. Oh, man, so I think we're on, okay, so we're on, 229?
Yep.
Oh, man, I was just looking over these, and this is just a real fun group of games here. So at 229, we have Super Mario 3D World. At 228, we have The Secret of Monkey Island. At 227, we have The Legend of Zelda. At 226, we have Tecmo Bowl, which should be Tecmo Super Bowl. At 225, we have You Don't Know Jack. At 224, we have Doganronpa 2. At 223, we have Mirror's Edge. At 222, we have City Connection. At 221, we have Wave Race. And at 220... we have Monster Hunter, and this should be the one that came out for the Wii U. I think it's like Monster Hunter. It's the Monster Hunter World is the one that just came out. It's like Monster Hunter Try. I think it's the one that came out on the Wii U. I can't remember the exact title of it, but that was pretty much the definitive Monster Hunter game until the last one came out.
So is Monster Hunter showing my heretical nature here? Is that, you know, very similar to a Pokemon style game, or what's the kind of style of game Monster Hunter is?
Monster Hunter is basically one of those games that generates a boss rush. So it's like you have item management and boss rush mode, basically. The monsters are all bosses, and they all it's all fighting like bosses. You don't catch them, you don't keep them, you just kill them.
Okay.
And then harvest them.
Yeah.
It's very similar to like an MMO except it has like a definitive end.
Okay.
I feel like, but that's basically how they're kind of designed, is that they're all sort of like general MMOs, but very Japanese in nature. let's see, and other games
I like
here.
You Don't Know Jack making the list here.
Oh, dude, I had to put that game on here simply because I love trivia games. It's a fantastic party game. And it's actually kind of funny. It's made me chuckle a few times. It plays smooth and it makes sense. And you can always get
a group of people together to play it. I was actually torn between putting that and trying to cheap out and just putting one of the party packs on here. But I decided just to go with You Don't Know Jack because I think it's a little bit more accessible for folks than some of the other some of the other party pack games like Quidlash and like that. And I like Quidlash.
Yeah, I was going to make a Quiplash joke and see where that was on the list, but at least You Don't Know Jack made it, so that's good enough there.
Yeah.
So what's your distinction between Tecmo Bowl and Tecmo Super Bowl then?
Tecmo Super Bowl has all the licenses for the NFL. And so those are all actually licensed players
on Tecmo Super Bowl. The Tecmo Bowl has players. I just don't think it has team names. So I think it had the license for NFLPA, just not the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, because
Tecmo Super Bowl has both licenses.
Okay, so that's what because I remember playing Tecmo Bowl and always playing as the 49ers, and just running the ball everywhere, and knowing that those players had names. But yeah, that's what. So Tecmo Super Bowl, I mean. Yeah, pedantically, is that on Super Nintendo or is that the next rev on Nintendo?
That's the next rev on Nintendo.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the one that's, yeah, I think it's players. Yeah, I think it's players and teams on that. And then, because I've played both of them. My copy of Tecmo Bowl doesn't completely work. My copy of just Tecmo Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it has the complete license, I think, is the difference. Let's see here. Folks probably aren't going to be familiar with Doganrapa, or there's two that folks might not be familiar with here. I just want to touch on before we continue. There's Doganrapa 2, which is a visual novel where it's a part of a series where it is you're a high schooler solving a series of murders of your classmates.
Interesting.
And it's very Japanese, very fun, nice visual novel, compelling, with logic puzzles. And of course there's City Connection, which is a game by, Jalco, which I think might not be the only one on here. I hope it's not. I hope I put the other one on here too. We'll see. City Connection is a, territory, kind of game, very arcadey. You're basically painting the streets, avoiding hitting oil cans or shooting oil cans and avoiding cops and hitting stray cats. It's very it's very 8-bit, very rudimentary, but God, is it addicting.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
I had a buddy of mine. We would play games together, and this game somehow always ended up in the Nintendo. And we'd be constantly passing the controller back and forth. Like, you know, I had to put it on here for him. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's just so damn good. So I guess we can move on to the next little group here. So at 219, we have Saturn Bomberman. At 218, we have The Last of Us. At 217, we have Fatal Fury, Mark of the Wolves. At 216, we have Super Mario Bros. 2, a.k.a. Doki Doki Panic. At 215, we have Super Mario World 2. At 214, we have Ice Hockey. At 213, we have Wipeout. At 212, we have Tekken Tag. At 211, we have Eternal Darkness. And at 210, we have Dragon Warrior. Saturn Bomberman is absolutely one of the best versions of Bomberman. It came out on the Sega Saturn. And I think it allows you to have up to 16 players.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I knew of where I didn't have a Saturn at the time. My cousin did, but it was one where that was the first ones that had a ridiculous amount of simultaneous players at the same time.
Yes, and man, is it fun. I am very familiar with this game because I love Bomberman. However, I do not have a copy of this for my Saturn because it is very expensive. and my Saturn life and stuff for the Saturn is so hard to find.
Yeah.
And there's a part of me where I'm not going to pay $200+ to play Bomberman on the Sega Saturn. It is very expensive. It is very good. And it is very, very fun.
from all the gameplay and all the Let's Plays I've seen of it. Fatal Fury, Marco Wolves. One of the things I try to do with this list is I try to show a lot of love to developers that might not necessarily get it. Believe it or not, SNK is one of those developers. If you look through the Game Informer's list, that just got absolutely shat on. Mm-hmm. I tried to show them some love now that I have a Neo Geo, and I have played quite a few of their games anyway, since a lot of their games were the offering of the job for the Switch.
Okay.
Fatal Fury Mark the Wolves is also the definitive version of Fatal Fury. Very good and very fun, very a little hard to play on the Dreamcast without a arcade stick, because the Dreamcast controller is kind of dookie for that. But very smooth and very polished.
I may have misspoke earlier when I said that Final Fantasy VII was my most favorite game of all time, because ice hockey is right up there with it, since that was so seemingly so simple. But just having, you know, three different types of guys that you could – three different body builds that you could select for your team. And then, you know, this was still early 90s, maybe even late 80s, so not – it was still, it had to be late
in 87.
Yeah. When I got it, late 80s. And so, you know, the USSR was still a thing. So going in and being able to play as USA Hockey, against, the evil Soviets, and, you know, having the fat guys, the normal guys, the skinny guys, speedy guys, and figuring that out. And then, you know, just playing that against, cause I think it was, probably the US, Russia, Sweden, Canada, Czechoslovakia, and somebody else. I mean, hell, that was the game that, you know, taught me how to pronounce Czechoslovakia, if I remember correctly, or at least figure out what it was. So that's one of my favorites. Dragon Warrior is one that, even with my affinities for RPGs, I haven't played it. Since growing up, I was told that Dragon Warrior 2 was too old of a game for me and I wouldn't understand it, so I wasn't allowed to play it by a friend's parent. And so it kind of turned me off of the game for a while, just because I didn't want to play it. If I was like, okay, fine, you can have your shit, I don't care, kind of that whole thing, any club that wants me a member, I don't want to be a part of type thing. And then eventually, once I started playing Final Fantasy and digging into the backlog of games and understanding what it was one that I always wanted to play, but I never took the time to sort out a functioning Nintendo system, nor a functioning copy of the game itself. So that's on, once we move and I have a little bit more space, that would be a system that I plan to get back into and play up again.
Yes, the version of that I'd recommend is actually Dragon Warrior 1 and 2 on the Game Boy Color. It is a updated port of Dragon Warrior, and it's actually from my research, that's actually the definitive version of that game. It's actually on the Game Boy Color because they fixed the encounter rate.
Okay.
And that's the one that I've seen several different classic game YouTubers recommend, or retro game YouTubers, or whatever you want to call them.
Nice. That'll be a start then.
Let's see. A lot of these games are also self-explanatory in this little section. I don't feel like they need any explanation about why why they are here. All good. All either they all you hear them. A lot of folks should be familiar with them. I think the sleeper that's not even a sleeper anymore is Eternal Darkness.
Okay. That's one that I'm not familiar with.
That. It's one of the few M-rated titles on the original game original GameCube. Okay. Apparently, there's two GameCubes in my universe. And it does a very good job of setting atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
And playing mind tricks on the player.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff where it'll fuck with the display, pretend that it's turning and muting and turning up the volume on your television. Now, granted, all those effects are dated, but does a very good job of explaining all of it. and setting atmosphere and expectations, and it plays pretty well too. So that one's that's one, if you ask a lot of people a little younger than us, that their first or second system would have been the GameCube, that's one that would usually be on their top 10 list.
Okay.
So let's see. So at 209, we've got a Mighty Final Fight. At 208, we have Illbleed. At 207, we have Splatoon. at 206, we have Lumines. At 205, we have the original Tecmo Bowl. And at 204, we have System Shock 2. At 203, we have Kirby's Dream Land 3. At 202, we have Pokemon X and Y. At 201, we have Yakuza. And at 200, we have Wing Commander.
And is that a Star Wars IP or no?
It does have Mark Hamill.
Okay.
But it is not a Star Wars IP.
Okay.
Actually, I think it's like Wing Commander 3 is what that I think it's Wing Commander 3 or 4. But basically, it's a very... this is like I'm not super, super familiar with Wing Commander 3 or Wing Commander, the Wing Commander series. But that's the one that if you ask PC gamers, you know, if you ask for top 5 from any PC gamer that started playing PC in the late 80s onward, mm-hmm. Wing Commander
is going to be on the list.
Yes. We have, I hope that's the only pseudo duplicate with Tecmo Bowl there. But we have basically what would be the best version of the Pokemon game for the 3DS, which is Pokemon X and Y, which actually revolutionized a whole bunch of stuff with that game. Very smooth, which I think I've talked about the Pokemon Sun and Moon enough on this podcast for folks to get that. We have Kirby's Dream Land 3, which is the definitive version of Kirby. I can't remember if Kirby's Adventure is on here or not. A couple of games that folks won't be familiar with here. Illbleed. We'll start with Illbleed, which is a game on the Sega Dreamcast, which is kind of a corny horror movie slash amusement. Like you're trapped in a horror movie slash like horror themed amusement park.
Interesting.
Very. Like the control itself isn't great on the game, but it's very fun and has a lot of personality. Mighty Final Fight, which is basically the version of Final Fight for the NES. It is the only home port of a Final Fight game where you can choose all three characters on a Nintendo system.
Okay.
In Final Fight, you can choose Hagar, Cody, or Guy in the arcade version. In the Super Nintendo versions, all the way up in Final Fight, you can only choose Guy and Hagar. It was so stupid. They actually came out with a Final Fight Guy. Once again, you can only choose Guy or Hagar. You can't choose Cody. I think in the later ones they rectified that, I think. And of course you have Final Fight CD where you can play all three on the Sega Genesis. And Lumines is a puzzle game that came out for the PSP. You basically match in color blocks to form squares. Very good, very stylistic, good music. And it allows you to really focus, and it's very fun. Very easy pick up and play there. That's that little section there. Let's see. So we stopped at, okay.
199 into the, yep. The 100s now?
Yep. So at 199, we have BioShock. 198, we have Super Smash Bros. 197, we have Super Mario Maker. 196, we have Panic Restaurant.
At 195, we have Super Bomberman. At 194, we have Lunar. At 193, we have Psychonauts. At 192, we have the Shadow of the Colossus. At 191, we have Braid. And at 190, we have Seventh Guest. I feel all these games, the one game that folks may not be familiar with here is Panic Restaurant. It was in a late NES release. I would urge folks to go out and play it. You're a chef, and you basically fighting against the food. It's a platformer, very tight controls. It's by Taito.
Okay.
One of the things here with the NES in general, the Taito, Capcom, and I think it's just Taito and Capcom release some some bangers of platformers on the NES near the end part of its life. Panic, I would tell folks to go out and play Panic Restaurant, but you're better off emulating it because it is very expensive. I think it's up to $500
now. Wow.
So I would also recommend folks go out and play Mighty Final Fight, we were talking about before. Once again, that game's up to $200. So,
what do you know about, or like how much background do you have on Seventh Guest? Because that's another one that was a GamePro All-Star, but one I never actually got hands-on with.
So this is a game that I own. I actually found the big box PC version at a flea market with our buddy Jason a few years ago, a long time ago. I'm not too big into PC game collecting, but I have a big box version of a big box copy of Seventh Guest. However, I don't have the hardware to play it.
Okay.
That's another one of those games where I know it's incredibly innovative with the full motion video and that was woven into the gameplay. And is a must of to have there on the list. I wish I was a little bit more familiar with it, but to be honest, PC games are kind of my weak spot because I didn't have access to a PC growing up.
Okay.
I think the first PC game I played was like Red Faction 2.
One of the Command & Conquers, or was that a Command & Conquer one or something else, or just standalone Red Faction title?
Just standalone Red Faction. Somebody ended up giving it to me. So I was like, oh, I'll play this. And booted it up on the Dell that my aunt ordered from a magazine. And took up about a few of the gigs there of the 64 gig hard drive. I scrolled over.
We're good. We're at 189.
All right. So 189, we have Alone in the Dark. 188, we have Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. 187, we have Bubble Bobble. At 186, we have MVP Baseball. At 185, we have Sparkster. At 184, we have Rayman. At 183, we have Final Fantasy IX. At 182, we have Star Fox 64. At 181, we have Star Wars Battlefront 2. For the original Xbox and PS2 and PSP. And at 180, we have Pro Evolution 06.
And that's Pro Evolution Soccer 06?
Yes. Through a ton of research, I went through several different lists of the greatest footy games of all time lists. Pro Evolution was either one or two in every single one of those lists from several different publications. So from that, I can pretty much determine that this is probably the definitive soccer game. Apparently the AI was fantastic in it and all that. And MVP Baseball is another one of those games that, apparently that was very good, very good simulation baseball, and was pretty close to being one of the few, the higher echelon baseball games. Let's see. A lot of these games in this section speak for themselves. The only one that folks might not be familiar with is Sparkster. which is the sequel to Rocket Knight Adventures. That was a Genesis-only exclusive. Okay. The games for Sparkster are different on the Sega Genesis and the Super Nintendo. Sparkster on the Super Nintendo plays a little slower. That's that version that's on here. The Sega Genesis version plays like more Rocket Knight Adventures. So they're slightly different games, and it's the Super Nintendo version that's on here. The rest of those games, a lot of folks are familiar with. I would hope.
So I haven't looked ahead, but is that the only Call of Duty, or are there others that we're going to be seeing?
That is the only Call of Duty.
Okay.
From what I've seen, and from all the polls that I've taken, informal polls, everything, and from what I've played of Call of Duties, those games are all the fucking same.
Yep. Just wasn't sure if there was anything specific about Modern Warfare 2 that made it different, but if that's the only one, I can take that one.
Yeah. That's the one that I think a lot of folks, that's the one that a lot of folks basically recommended as being the best Call of Duty game.
Okay.
I don't know necessarily how true that is. I've played, as once again, it's a game that should be on this list. I've played them, not in love with them, but I know a lot of people enjoy them and would consider them really good games. So I put them on here. So at 179 here, we have Deus Ex, which I guess would be the Invisible War. We have Ninja Gaiden at 178. 177, we have Prince of Persia. 176, we have Splatterhouse. At 175, we have Zork. At 174, we have Streets of Rage 3. At 173, we have Musha. At 172, we have Shovel Knight. At 171, we have Shenmue. And at 170, we have Rock Band.
Nice.
I had to put Rock Band down here. I had too many good memories of playing Rock Band with friends. Rock Band did something that Guitar Hero didn't. I can't remember if I actually put a Guitar Hero on here or not. But I know for me, Rock Band was a lot more of a easy intro into the rhythm games. If you're someone like me who's not very good at games, Rock Band was a godsend because you didn't really want to drum, you didn't want to play guitar. But you didn't want to sing, but thank God you can play a bass.
Yeah. You wanted to play with your friends who could play better, but yep. You didn't want to bring everybody down and be playing the same song over and over again.
Yep. Some stuff here that folks might not be familiar with. Musha, arguably the best shooter on the original Sega Genesis. There's a lot of shmups on this list just because it's me. I would recommend, I think it's by the same folks that did Thunder Force. I think it's the same studio. I'm not sure. Don't quote. I think it's actually a different studio. So scratch that. Maybe be the same. I can't remember. But Musha is very good. Arguably one of the best games on the Sega Genesis, also very expensive. But one of the best games on the Sega Genesis. We have Zork. Can't have one of these lists without Zork.
Mm-hmm.
Go West.
A nice shout out to some friends at work, and I worked on it a couple years ago. But there's a game that we did for actually working with enterprise information technology and stuff I was doing on a daily basis. That was basically built around the concepts and basically a clone of Zork, but then it would also help teach you a lot of cloud based technology. So even though I haven't touched Zork itself in I don't know how long. It's something that still holds like a place that's near and dear to my heart, just based off of the work we've done with kind of creating a world since then. I say we, but mostly the other team and I contributed, you know, for 3 months, a year or 2 years ago, and then haven't really contributed much since, but they've kept it running, and it's interesting to see where that's going.
Yeah. So one of the things too, that we might be noticing here through the list too, as we're going up, the games are getting more solidified with their how iconic they are and their popularity, as well as gameplay ability. Let's see here. I don't think there's any others. You know, the games are starting to get important. let's see. We stepped off at once. Okay. So at 169, we have NHL 07. 168, we have Doom. At 169, we have Rocket Knight Adventures. At 166, we have Gran Turismo. At 165, we have God of War. At 164, we have Blazing Lasers. At 163, we have Wii Sports Club. At 162, we have King's Quest. That should probably be King's Quest 6. At 161, we have Red Dead Redemption. And at 160, we have Quake 3 Arena. So I know there's a game that folks, two games in this little group here that folks probably aren't going to be necessarily familiar with, and that's going to be Blazing Lasers and Rocket Knight Adventures. Blazing Lasers is a TurboGrafx-16 game. It's a shoot 'em up, and it's one of the better games on the system, and it's a very iconic TurboGrafx-16 game. It's basically one of the games that if you're going to build a TurboGrafx-16 library, you have to have it. Rocket Knight Adventures, you're a possum who's a knight, and you have a rocket strapped to your back. I saw advertisements for this game. It's by Konami. We're talking 90s Konami, so it's good. Not the fucking Castlevania pachinko machines that we have today. Absolutely fantastic. Fantastic game. Very good. It's actually in my Nomad right now. Very good. I saw ads for this all the time reading comic books as a kid. And I finally found it and I finally played it and it just made me warm and happy inside. And it's actually really good. Let's see in there. So I think I mentioned Wii Sports as a honorable mention. The game that basically took its spot is actually Wii Sports Club, which is just the better version of Wii Sports. It came out on the Wii U. What it did is it took everything you loved about Wii Sports and Wii Sports Resort and all of that stuff and shoved it all together in one disc, updated some of the gameplay stuff, and gave you online play.
Okay.
So I want to say it's the definitive version of the Wii Sports, but if I don't know if the online servers are still up right now, unfortunately. but this game was fun. It gave you clubs where you could see if you were the best fucking bowler in your state or country, and you could compete against other people in your state or country and worldwide. Really fun, really innovative. And I wish more people had seen it. Apparently, they did not print any copies of this game. It took me. This is a Wii U game. When I got my Wii U, I found out about this. It took me 2.5 years to find this game. Store. They did not print enough copies of this game. Maybe longer than that. I picked this game up. I think a year and a half ago, and I paid $50 for it. And it's still about that price right now because it's one of the most uncommon games on the Wii.
Yeah, I mean, that's surprising.
So I've seen it listed once on OfferUp recently, and that's the first time I'd seen it listed at all on anything. A lot of these other games really speak for themselves. The NHL... once again, some of the sports games I wasn't too familiar with that I hadn't personally played. Through what I saw, apparently NHL 07 was one of the better hockey games. I'm not sure how much that necessarily might be true, but from the articles and stuff that I saw, that it was really good, and it did something different, I think, with like one part of gameplay that actually made it more sim based.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure exactly what that was.
Yeah. I mean, I've played hockey since I was five, but then, that's one, you would think I would be attracted to hockey games just based on my DNA, but for some reason, even with, you know, starting out right with ice hockey on NES, there just weren't many hockey games that I took to as a player. So I don't know if I was overthinking it or whatnot, but that was definitely an era where I was not playing hockey games. So that's one where I have no unique opinion on what exactly happened in, you know, the 2006 year to say why NHL 07 is a great one. But that'll be one I'll add to my list to see to come back to.
It could be. It's the one thing. It's like, as I said, I've played over 90% of this, but that still leaves out like 20, you know, that still leaves what, 30 games that I like haven't necessarily touched. Unfortunately, that's one of them. But in the next little group here, at 159, we have Flower. At 158, we have Portal. At 157, we have Warcraft. At 156, we have Asteroids. At 155, we have Metal Slug X. At 154, we have NHL 94. At 153, we have Pocky and Rocky. At 152, we have Psychonauts. At 151, we have Power Stone 2. And at 150, we have Adventure Island. I guess this should technically... It shouldn't be Super Adventure. It should just be Adventure Island. With good old Master Higgins. So, fun fact, this Psychonauts is actually the second game on this list that you can download. If you have Amazon Prime, you get Twitch, you have a Twitch Prime subscription for free, and they give you games every month for free. Psychonauts and Gone Home are actually free downloads through Twitch Prime.
Oh, I did not know that.
PC games. Yep. Yeah, and I'm actually really excited because I don't have a copy of Psychonauts right now, and I feel my computer should be strong enough to play a game from circa 2003. some games here, Pocky and Rocky. It's a game by Natsumi. They're the folks that make Harvest Moon and some other fun games like Wild Guns. At Pocky and Rocky, it's a cute 'em up. You're a girl and you have a raccoon. You're Pocky and the raccoon is Rocky, and you shoot stuff. You're like a shrine girl, and you're like sealing away demons and stuff. And it's really cute and it's really fun. It's really addicting and it's really tough.
And that platform is
Super Nintendo.
Okay.
Of course, we have to include Asteroids on this list. Honestly, Asteroids would be a little higher if the movement for the ship and Asteroids was so loose. For me, that would actually be a little higher. Like, it's fun. Very fun. Ate a lot of quarters in arcades. I just don't like necessarily how loose the ship is, mm-hmm. ship feels, but...
And Power Stone here is the fighting game on Dreamcast.
Power Stone 2. Power Stone 2. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that was an awesome one. I mean, similar to my infatuation with Soul Calibur. I mean, Power Stone itself, I mean, was really one of the ones that kind of came out with multi-stage fighting, breakable environments, and a lot of that stuff really, like, and did it, like, right. That, I mean, you see in pretty much almost every other fighting game today. So that was, it's nice to see that one kind of reflected in here for the some of the Dreamcast love there.
Yep. We have Adventure Island here, which would be Master Higgins. Some dude kidnaps your girlfriend, and you gotta eat fruit, and you're on an island, and you gotta go save her.
You gotta save her by eating all the fruit on the island?
Yes. Depending on the version of this, I'm thinking of Wonder Boy. The old Wonder Boy games, but with Adventure Island, you go do you basically save her. It's a nice tight little platformer by Hudson Soft, very fun. And I had to throw Hudson Soft a little bit more love on this list, considering the two Bomberman entries wasn't enough for me. let's see. So at 149, we have Fire Emblem. This should be Awakening.
considering we didn't have access to a shit ton of Fire Emblem games here. And this is the one of the few ones I've actually been able to get my hands on. It's on the 3DS. And it's actually a very good version of Fire Emblem. The ones for Game Boy Advance, Wii, and GameCube all have insane price points that make it very hard. And I honestly just haven't found one yet.
It's one that's been on my list to keep an eye out on in some form or fashion as well, just because I know that they're very highly regarded. But yeah, again, it's one for the price point that it's not worth jumping into.
Yeah. But Fire Emblem Awakening is reasonably priced. It's like, I think it's about $20. So that's fine. It's just not one. Feel like the GameCube one. We have Command & Conquer Red Alert at $148. At 147, we have Panzer Dragoon Saga. At 146, we have NBA Hang Time. At 145, we have Baldur's Gate 2. At 144, we have ActRaiser. At 143, we have NFL 2K1. At 142, we have the Oregon Trail. At 141, we have Firewatch. At 140, we have Cave Story. Let's see, Panzer Dragoon Saga, unfortunately this is a game that is just out of my price range for the Sega Saturn. Mm-hmm. It's $300 to $400 right now.
That was another GamePro All-Star when, you know, yep. I was reading there and I didn't know what the hell Panzer Dragoon meant. And then, you know, once I got a little bit older, it was like, no, it's just literally transliterated to be like Armored Dragon. But, you know, it took me how long to figure out what it was. But yeah, that's one that was always on, you know, the kind of the brass ring to be able to play and get around to, but one I never actually was able to. Yep.
It's very good. And I actually really want to play it. I just don't know how I'm going to get my hands on it.
Yep.
I was actually listening to a podcast about 6 or 7 months ago, one of the gaming podcasts, actually a little longer than that, where one of the gentlemen talks about his quest to get a copy of that game. Let's see.
I mean, the other nice thing about this section is Firewatch is on there. And so now I know that it's valid and worth the time, so that next time, you know, Steam is spamming me with something on your Steam wish list is on sale and it's Firewatch and it's, you know, if it's under $10, then I can go pick it up then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm very familiar with this game. It's another one of those walking adventure games like Gone Home. But it tells a fantastic story. I don't have it yet because I am a whore for physical media. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've know that. oh, you have thousands of games and you buy DVDs still? There is a physical release of this that I desperately want, but I am very close to caving to actually completely dive in this game to get the rest of the story of it. And I'm so close, but I really want that physical copy of this by Limited. Of course, we have the Oregon Trail here. A lot of these games, big name games here. A couple that folks might not be familiar with, those are listening. ActRaiser, it is a Super Nintendo platformer by Enix? No. Damn it, I can't remember who it's by. It's a banger. If you wanted 16-bit Super Nintendo platforming, stabbing stuff with a little bit of simulation in it, ActRaiser. The music's fantastic. You're basically God. You go down to Earth to kill like some demons. After the platforming levels, you pop into an overhead sim level where you can, like, you know, have your followers or whatever do stuff for you, or you can punish them. You pop down, kill some demons, come back up, and see if they want to build you a church. really fun. That's going to drive me wild and mad until I can figure out that. And of course, Cave Story. This is a game that's come out a few times and actually just came out on the Switch again as a launch as a port.
very fun action platformer, 16-bit style, very fun, cute, not cute little story, but it has a tight little story that goes with it as well. Let's see. We have 139 here. We have Max Payne. 138, we have Harvest Moon. At 137, we have Burnout, which this should be Burnout. This should be Takedown. At 136, we have Assassin's Creed 2. At 135, we have Super Mario Galaxy. At 134, we have Bonk's Adventure. At 133, we have what is it? Elder Scrolls Oblivion. At 132, we have Okami. At 131, we have Guitar Hero. That should probably be Guitar Hero 2. And at 130, we have Joust. You know, a lot of solid titles throughout this little section here. A little artsy. A couple titles that folks
might
not
be. Yeah, I mean, this is probably, we said one of the other ones was most eclectic section, but I mean, this is probably like one of, even with something like Oblivion, this is more of something that's probably like one of the more indie style ones that's going to be on the list.
I believe Bonk's Adventure here is the last TurboGrafx game that's listed here. I wish I owned a TurboGrafx so I could get my hands on more of these games. Bonk's Adventure, this could technically be Airzonk, but I just want Bonk's Adventure because if somebody out there wants to find it, or they could also play it on the NES. It's a very good 8-bit platformer. One of the better games on the TurboGrafx. Very good. Once again, unfortunately, this is another game that's very expensive right now on the NES. So, if anyone out there wants to send me a copy, thank you. we've got Harvest Moon, which is what from niche to bigger niche, your sweet farm simulating stuff, interaction there. Oregon Trail, one of the best edutainment games. Guitar Hero. I mean, a lot of these just really speak for themselves here in this section. And of course, you got Max Payne. It's sort of an indie section, but real. That outside of Bonk, that captures the entire gaming. That captures, like, the entire aughts gaming in a nutshell.
Yep.
Like, you replace Bonk with a... You replace Bonk and Joust with like a GTA and like a Halo, and that's everything.
Yeah, it's pretty much everything. There is what was getting in the transition from GamePro, EGM, Game Informer to the GameSpot, and then all of the online IGN coverage of all of that stuff. Yep. So I mean, those were plenty of IGN heroes on that list.
Let's see. All right. So this little group in here, we have at 129, The Witcher 2, at 128, we have Lemmings. At 127, we have Fire Pro Wrestling. At 126, we have Ocarina of Time. At 125, we have MLB The Show. At 124, we have NFL 2K5. At 123, we have Combat on the original Atari 2600. At 126, we have Miss. Oh, excuse me. At 122, we have Miss. Okay. At 121, we have Mortal Kombat. And it's probably going to be Mortal Kombat Ultimate 3. I just forgot to put a modifier, but they're all kind of functionally the same. Just a little bit more violence each one.
Well, yeah, I can see that one. I mean, you've got pretty much the best of all the worlds before MK4 kind of screwed it all up, and before kind of the contemporary versions. So I could see if that's the sole entry on the list, I can definitely see Mortal Kombat Ultimate, Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, I think, was the actual title of it being that one. And then
at 120, we have Flashback.
Yep.
you know, I mean, this list is like this part of this list here is kind of like a who's who of like real, like definitive games for the respective systems
or even genre
or genres.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Flashback kind of being the only outlier here, for that, but in a way it's still, I mean, still really definitive in itself. For the sports games here, NFL 2K5 is the perfect mix between arcade and sim for football. This game is so popular. I remember I've personally played this. I still have my copy from when I was a young teen. I remember logging so many hours in this, and that game shows up on every single list as like the best football game of all time.
I mean,
MLB The Show.
Yeah, that's the same experience or the same knowledge I have of MLB The Show. I've only played that very infrequently, but it's very similar to where, I mean, it's hands down like the best baseball simulator out there.
Yep. Yep. And that MLB The Show wasn't even on the Game Informer list. And that's the thing, you know, you wanted to really start including that. Fire Pro Wrestling, nice mix of, you know, sim and arcade, leaning a little closer to sim. You know, I mean, those games are all bangers of the respective genre. And of course, Miss. When I did this, there was, I was so happy when I asked on Facebook, best games of all time. And somebody responded Miss. And I was like, thank you. Yes. People out there, the adventure fans are out there. Mm-hmm. So let's see here. And of course, Mortal Kombat and, you know, Flashback or Mortal Kombat and Flashback.
Yep.
At 119, we have Kingdom Hearts. At 118, we have Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind. At 117, we have Warlords. At 116, we have Fable. At 115, we have Ape Escape. At 114, we have Wonder Boy. That should be Wonder Boy 3 and the Dragon's Trap. At 113, we have Team Fortress 2. At 112, we have Grand Theft Auto 3. At 111, we have Conker's Bad Fur Day. At 110, we have Metal Gear Solid. Once again, those are, you know, all bangers for their respective systems. As we're going up and we're getting closer to the top of the list here, it's really starting to thin out into definitive must-own titles for those systems.
And that Metal Gear Solid is Metal Gear Solid, yeah. No modifier on that one?
Yes. Just Metal Gear Solid there. And we, I went with the first Fable because that one's actually playable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was when I had the big Xbox brick. That was the one game that I was kicking myself for waiting so long to get an Xbox and start playing. I know I never finished it. I don't remember how much time I got into that. And then when whatever system Fable 2 came out, I think it was still Xbox. I don't think it was a 360.
On 360 is one of the first titles.
Okay, so yeah, so then I must have tried playing it on 360, and I was like, this is the complete opposite experience of what I A, just had, and B, thought I was going to have, and I don't think I put more than like 15, 20 minutes into it.
You know, all these games people are really going to be relatively familiar with, except Wonder Boy. Platformer, old school platformer. I think it has small RPG elements in it too. It just actually got a remake, a re-release that came out not too long ago, actually. Definitely worth checking out all of that. And of course, Ape Escape, the premier, one of the best games on the original PlayStation. So fun. First game on the PlayStation to make use of the dual sticks.
Yep. Yeah, that was a good one. I didn't play it much, and I know I didn't play it all the way through, but it was definitely a good time had by all whenever that game was being played.
Yeah. So let's see. So at 109 we have Jet Set Radio. At 108 we have Sunset Riders. At 107 we have Die Hard Arcade. That's the actual title of it, regardless of what system you play it on. Mm-hmm. At 106 we have Devil May Cry. Oh man, I didn't spell that right at all. At 105, we have Katamari Damacy. At 104, we have GoldenEye. At 103, we have Berserk. At 102, we have XCOM. At 101, we have Civ. And at 100, we have Zombies Ate My Neighbor.
So I love Jet Set Radio getting a shout out here. That was, for me, one of the kind of genre breaking or just a new genre creating games for Dreamcast, and one that I sunk a shit ton of time into on that system, and one that I didn't feel like it got enough love, but just you can even now, like, you can see a lot of I mean, you can see a lot of the elements of customization and kind of just interactive gameplay that game gave you in a lot of the games now. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I remember from Jet Set Radio that you could almost see one for one in some of the Overwatch yep. customizations. And so that's one that I'm a huge fan of there. I like Devil May Cry. It was one that I never played much on. I think most of that series was out when I was in college. I didn't play it. I had plenty of friends that did. I watched them play it, and I, you know, love the gameplay, love the concepts, most of the move systems and everything. So that was pretty cool. We touched on GoldenEye last week and my affinity for, or anti affinity for, actually remembering any of the fucking maps. and so that gives me enough trauma to not talk anymore on there, aside from, you know, seeing it right around the top 100, which I'm happy about.
Yeah, so there's a couple here I want to touch base with, and then we'll get to stepping. Of course, I had to have a Civ on here. I put Civ 5 because that's the one I've played. That's the one I also Civ 5 gave me the courage to warn other people to tell them not to play Civ unless they want to lose hours and hours and days of their time.
Well, I mean, and I think that's like, that is a series unique in and of itself, where it is one where it perpetually and iteratively just gets bigger and bigger and better and better. So it isn't one where by adding more, like where certain games you're like, well, more or less is more type situations, and I know it's like Civ is just more is more and more is better. So that's one where, yeah, it's just, you know, it's the fifth one because they just keep getting better.
Yeah, I'll tell this quick Civ story. So one of our mutual friends, he told me, he's like, oh man, he's like, hey, I think I got Civ 5 free, or he got like Civ 4 Civ 5 free with his graphics card. And I was like, dude, I'm like, don't play it. He's like, why? I'm like, it's really good. He's like, why shouldn't I play? I'm like, dude, I'm like, you'll lose all your fucking time. He's like, I fucking won't. And then like 3 days later, he sent me a message. He's like, you were right.
It's all gone.
And I was like, I told you. Of course, we have two arcade games here that have really good home ports. We have Die Hard Arcade, which has a port on the Sega Saturn, and Sunset Raiders, which has a very good port on the Super Nintendo. Both of those are really fun arcade games. Sunset Raiders is a Western style shoot 'em side scroller shooter.
Okay, that's what I thought that was. I wasn't sure, but that's I know seeing the arcade marquee of that one now.
Yeah, and I believe that one's by Konami.
Yep.
I hope that's right. And Die Hard Arcade, I believe, was published by Sega. It came out, has nothing to do with the movie. Mixes 3D polygonal beat 'em up arcade gate style levels with quick time events. Really fun, totally cheesy, and I love it way too much.
Yeah, that was another one that was at the movie theaters when I was growing up, and that would be one where being too young to see the movie at certain times, but then still just playing the game and seeing it as kind of all those different styles mashed up together, that it was fun. It was a fun one singing quarters into.
Yep. And of course, I had to show some love for LucasArts Studios, which put out Zombies Ate My Neighbors. It's a parody game of all those 50s horror movies that came out. You're a kid who is protecting his neighbors from zombies. Zombies has 88 levels in it.
Oh.
And this that came out on the Sega Genesis and the Super Nintendo. I think I can get as deep as level 20 something without cheating, or cheating hashtag giving up. I think it's 88. I think it has 88 levels in it. I think. Yeah. Really fun. A lot of style. Not enough people love this game. It's not necessarily a hidden gem, but people need to try it out. Mm-hmm. So now we are officially in the top 100 here. At 99, we have Defender. At 98, we have Adventure. At 97, we have House of the Dead 2. I think there's at least as a pack as House of the Dead 2 or 3, but I think the arcade version is just House of the Dead 2. At 96, we have Arkanoid. At 95, we have Day of the Tentacle. At 94, we have Fallout 3. At 93, we have Diablo. At 92, we have Legend of the Mystical Ninja. At 91, we have Ikaruga. And at number 90, we have Aladdin for the Sega Genesis / Super Nintendo. I think that's supposed to be the Genesis version. The Aladdin game actually had two different publishers and two different developers, I should say, for the Genesis and the Sega, for the Genesis and the Super Nintendo. Yes, Capcom put out the one for the Super Nintendo, a very slow platformer. For the Genesis, it was put out by Virgin. It has fantastic animation in it, really smooth action platformer. They play totally differently. And I think it's actually the Sega Genesis version that's supposed to be on here.
Interesting, because I was trying to remember. I know I played it, or I either had it or played it for one of the systems, and I couldn't remember where I played it because I had Super Nintendo at my mom's house and my Genesis was at my dad's house. And so I don't know whether I owned it or whether it was a video game rental all-star. But I know I definitely played it, but I'd have to think long and hard about which experience I had, because I remember some of it, but not all of it.
Yeah. So here we have a lot of solid games. The one here that folks – there's two here that folks probably aren't going to be necessarily familiar with, that being Legend of the Mystical Ninja and Ikaruga. Legend of the Mystical Ninja is actually by Konami. It's based off of Goemon, which is basically a sea pirate that steals from the rich and gives to the poor. In Japanese mythos. Thank you. It's very good. Full of unique humor. Very smooth to play. The Legend of the Mystical Ninja is one of I paid $4.40 for this game.
Okay.
And it is the best game I have ever picked up for under $5. Absolutely so much. Most of my games are there. That's one of the few times I've actually purchased a game, went out of my way to purchase a game, and it was a very good purchase, and it is so good. Ikaruga is a shoot 'em up that came out on the Dreamcast in Japan, but got a port to the GameCube in like 2002 or 2003. I had to put it on this list because it is so ingenious with its concept. Your ship has two different colors, and the enemies are two different colors. If your ship matches the enemy's bullets, they heal you instead of killing you. Yes.
Yeah, that's so simple, and you know, something that can be programmed so easily, but something that hasn't really been done or I haven't seen anywhere really.
Yep. It's very good. And so smooth and just so ingenious, and I really enjoy it. And a lot of those other games listed here in that section that we just went over speak for themselves. Day of the Tentacle being one of the best adventure games of all time. House of the Dead 2 being a very good Sega light gun game, Diablo, Fallout 3, and of course Arkanoid. So let's see, at 89 here, we have Journey. At 88, we have Jade Empire. At 87, we have Donkey Kong Country, and this should be Donkey Kong Country 3. At 86, we have Dynamite Cop. At 85, we have Battlefield 1942. At 84, we have Dragon Quest VIII. At 83, we have The Sims 2. At 82, we have Neo Geo Turf Masters. At 81, we have Elite Beat Agents. And at 80, we have Minecraft. Once again, this is a stack of really definitive games for their respective systems. Dragon Quest VIII is arguably the best out of that Dragon Warrior Dragon Quest series. Dynamite Cop, which is basically the upgraded version of Die Hard Arcade. Very good. It's the best. I generally would either be Dynamite Cop or Die Hard Arcade. I put both on here because one has a very easy way for your home experience, which is through the Sega Dreamcast, which it plays just like an arcade. The Dreamcast had so many good arcade games or arcade ports that because the system, the hardware that Sega was using for their arcade games at the time was very similar to what they used in the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Of course, Battlefield 1942, classic shoot 'em up by Capcom. Jade Empire is probably the game that I'll probably end up talking about in this section the most. Jade Empire was the pseudo follow-up to Knights of the Republic by BioWare.
Okay, yeah, that's what I wanted to make sure that was the same one, because that was the game that popped in my head when you said Jade Empire. I just wasn't sure if it was the same one. So that, yeah, that's the one where I had that on one of the Xboxes that I gave you, that was soft modded. And, I never actually got around to playing, but it was one that was, you know, the soft sequel to the Knights of the Old Republic.
Yep. Very good. The combat in that game was so smooth, so good. I spent a lot of time with that as a teenager. And I kind of broke it because there's a section in that game where you're given a gun named Isabel. And so whenever you use a technique in that game, if you remember, you say the name of the technique. So it's like stop time. It's like freeze or whatever stupid thing it's called. And then it's like Isabel, Isabel, Isabel. I guess time's frozen and you're just like, doing whatever. You're just shooting them and rolling away. Really fun. Elite Beat Agents I had to put on here, which is actually one of the, it's a very, very good rhythm game on the DS. Very good pickup and play, very good music selection, very nice little story. Each song, what they do different with Elite Beat Agents and why I had to put it so high in this list to differentiate it from other rhythm games is that it tells a small story while you play the song in the background. So each section of the song is broken up into, each section of the song is broken up into sections. Jesus Christ, that's a tautological statement. So the song is broken up into sections, and each part has a different part of the story correlated to it. So it slightly changes whether or not you pass or fail that section. That's very cool. You don't see a lot of rhythm games necessarily taking that that path or risk to do something slightly different than the others. And of course, we have Turf Masters, which is the best arcade version golf game that you've got. And of course we have Journey there as well too, bringing up the indie side.
Yeah. I mean, on the main set there, Donkey Kong Country is, and I mean, I don't remember. I believe that would still be, even if three would be, is that still SNES or is that a different?
Yep.
Okay. I mean, that just that series is one of the best hands down all time series on Super Nintendo, where there was just so much depth, so much fun. And even as I was terribly losing, falling off platforms and losing my buy bananas, it was still a very fun game and series that, like, no matter what was happening, I was still having a good time in it.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, apparently very, very good. At 79 here, we have Wild Guns. At 78, we have Gradius. At 77, we have Super Mario 64. At 76, we have Grim Fandango. At 75, we have Afterburner. At 74, we have Gauntlet, the original. At 73, we have Kaboom for the Atari VCS, or 2600. At 72, we have Marble Madness. At 71, we have Fallout. At 70, we have Metal Gear Solid 3. Some absolute... Wild Guns is one of my favorite games.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fun. I think I've talked about it on here way too much already. We also have Afterburner.
One of my favorite of all time, just flight simulators that is just hands down. Like, before I even knew what an Afterburner was, I was playing that game. And so that's where it's just like, this is what like a flight sim should be.
Yep. I love the arcadey goodness of that game too. Some ones I love here are, Kaboom, by Activision, for the Atari 2600. For some of our younger listeners, if you're not familiar with that, you're tasked to stop a mad serial bomber who's dropping bombs into a building, and you're armed with three buckets of water. You gotta catch the bombs in the buckets of water. And it uses the Atari 2600 paddle controls, which are, if you've never if you've never experienced I would say trackball, but if you compared to the joysticks, those garbage joysticks for the Atari 2600, holy shit, the paddle controls are like the second coming of Christ.
Night and day difference there.
Yeah. And it uses it, and it's so fun, and the gameplay is so addicting, and it gets so fast. And I remember playing this, playing this game nonstop with Super Breakout at my aunt's, and I loved it. I still love it. I still jones for that Atari 2600 paddle control, like, just to play games like Kaboom and Super Breakout. Of course, we have Marble Madness, Grim Fandango, which is a banger of an adventure game. Really iconic as well. At 69, we have Mickey Mouse and the Castle of Illusion. At 68, we have Evo Search for Eden. At 67, we have Wolfenstein 3D. At 66, we have Time Crisis 2. At 65, we have EverQuest. At 64, we have Mario Kart Double Dash. At 63, we have Golden Axe. At 62, we have Daytona USA. And at 61, we have Halo 2. And 60 is Geometry Wars.
What platform was Double Dash on?
GameCube.
GameCube? Okay. Because that's really the only Mario Kart I haven't played, at least somewhat extensively.
I think it's the best one. It gives you a nice mix of options with using two drivers, having weights, and different styles of carts. It gives you a bit of item control, which is fantastic, which I thought was actually missing in Mario Kart 8. Has some very good track selection. And it actually, you can, since it's on the GameCube, you can do more with it than with the N64 version, which it plays substantially better than. There's some bangers in that list. One that people might question is actually Castle of Illusion at 69. I needed to put, there are a couple Disney platformers by Capcom on this list. Castle of Illusion series is just a fantastic intro series that a lot of kids might have grown up playing. And they're
very good, still kind of challenging depending on which one you're playing. And I remember playing this as a kid all the time, and it just being very good. Evo, which is by Enix, before they merged into Square, is a pseudo action RPG ish God Hand simulator.
I mean, I'd help you out there, but that's one that I have not come across. So there's nothing I can do to help you with that kind of cross genre. Figure it out.
So the basically for Evo, you're an assistant to Gaia, who puts you on the Earth, and you basically have a little character, and you fight and eat other characters or other creatures. Throughout time, as you do that, you gain evolution points. You spend evolution points to evolve your guy and customize your guy into a bigger, better creature. Like, for instance, one of the first levels is you're in the ocean, so you're eating, like, smaller fish in that as you're a fish. But as you get your evolution points and level up, you can get, like, a swordfish nose and, like, a sweet dorsal fin and a, you know, rough-scaled body and that kind of stuff. Very fun. Strangely addicting, but strangely engrossing for the level of customization that game has. And it's the fact that it's easy to pick up and play. So customization with pick up and play, it's got to be on this list.
Yeah.
Of course, I had to include Halo 2. Almost genre-defining in itself with LAN play and online. With online play of first-person shooter stuff there, too. I spent so many hours playing that game in college. It's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge FPS fan. Just in general, my reaction time is too slow. And again, we went back to I can't remember maps for shit. yeah, I mean, the Halo 2 is definitely one that had to be on here as far as the kind of one of the marquee FPSs of all time.
Yep. And of course, Geometry Wars being one of the most iconic Xbox Live Arcade games. Hands down. It was actually between that and Castle Crashers. And I think Geometry Wars is just the better game.
Mm-hmm.
So at number 59, we have Far Cry 3. At number 58, we have Little Samson. At number 57, we have Counter-Strike. 56, Contra. 55, Mario Party. 54, Super Mario Bros. 53, Mega Man 2. 52, Final Fantasy VII. 51, WoW. And number 50, A Link to the Past.
This is bullshit, and I lodged the rest of this under protest because that should be higher, but we'll get to that in a moment.
I'm assuming you're talking about Final Fantasy VII.
Yes.
That's fine.
As I look at the map of Midgar above my desk, yeah, that's there's a little Homerism for that one, but that's not too bad.
Yeah, it's close to the top 50. So, all those, I mean, the, you know, bangers in their fields here. The one here that folks probably aren't going to be familiar with is going to be Little Samson. This is a Taito platformer for the NES. And when I tell you how much this game's cost, you're going to fucking laugh at me for even putting it on here, because it's no one is ever going to buy this game or play it to see if I'm actually telling the truth about how good this is. It's not actually biblical themed, but you basically have like creature friends that you switch between, and each one has different powers that let you do and platform in different ways. Like, you can be a mouse that can climb walls and that kind of stuff. And you switch between the situations. Taito games at the end of the NES run did this a lot. This game is fantastic. It is a good game. However, I will probably actually never play this game because it sells for $1,000. unfortunately,
what system is that?
NES.
Okay.
I think the last listing for this game went for like $1,100. I've watched countless hours of people playing this, a little bit of emulator.
you know, I just unfortunately haven't had a copy to see whether or not if the emulation that I had was good enough.
I mean, I thought you were going to say like $3,000. So, I mean, I guess if that's the case, like it's not as bad, but still that's a lot for a single NES cart. So,
yeah, when it was down to like when I, you know, started collecting, when it was down to like, you know, like 150, you know, I probably would have gotten it, but I was super broke. So that's my own fault.
Yeah.
So at and the rest of those games there speak for themselves. At 49 here we have Half-Life 2. At 48 we have Dig Dug. Fun fact about Dig Dug before I forget. The character in Drill Dozer is actually the daughter of the main character in Dig Dug. Number 47 we have Imperium. Number 46 we have Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Number 45 we have Super Metroid. At number 44, we have Thief, which I spelled incorrectly.
Before E.
At number 43, we have Earthbound. At number 42, we have Metroid Prime. And number 41, we have Marvel vs. Capcom 2. And at number 40, we have Galaga. The one game people might not know here is probably Imperium. I actually picked this up from one of our mutual friends. It was the only game in the entire. They were kind enough to take a picture of everything to send it to me, which I have folks do to see like what I'm getting, to see whether or not if it's gonna actually make it into the closet or just stay downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
This was the only game I wasn't familiar with because I could not make it out in the picture. It's a fantastic space shoot 'em up. Very smooth. It's by the same. Family that does like Space Megaforce. A lot of the Super Nintendo shoot 'em ups are kind of expensive. But this one I wasn't familiar with. I played it. I was like, holy shit, this is fantastic. It's got to go on every list ever.
Nice.
more people need to know about it. The rest of these games are actually, you can't even call Earthbound a hidden gem anymore. But all of these games are very, very good games. We're gonna end up in this list in some way or fashion. And that's pretty much, you know, that's pretty much it.
Yep. And most of those, have found their way into, you know, Game of the Year packages, Hall of Fame packages, blah, blah, blah. Yep. So, I mean, all of those are in there where, you know, it's the tipping point where these are some of the, we're, you know, crushing the creme de la creme for most of these games, yeah. Genres and platforms.
Yep. So at number 39, we have Contra 3. At 38, we have Gauntlet Legends. At 37, we have Mega Man Legends. At 36, we have Final Fight. At 35, we have Mario Bros. At 34, we have Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. At 33, we have Turtles in Time. At 32, we have Illusion of Gaia. At 31, we have Mega Man X. And at number 30, we have Chrono Trigger. once again, all of these games knocks it out. They all knock it out of the park.
That's like the wet dream I had when I was a 12-year-old of every game I could ever have. Like, I mean, like if you gave me that yes. list of like games when I was 12, it would be like, okay, we're done. Like, I don't need to grow up like this. I'll just stay here and play these forever.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, all of those games are very good. The final, for those of you that are, may not be completely familiar with Final Fight, good ports of that to play are Final Fight CD. Which is actually the definitive home version of Final Fight, except you would need a Sega Genesis, a non-discredited version of Final Fight CD, a Sega CD, and a TV. We probably have the TV. those are all bangers.
I mean, shit, when we went to Galloping Ghost last summer, I mean, that's what I spent, like, literally 45 minutes just playing Gauntlet Legends just because it was, you know, free play and just jumping through there. So that's definitely one there.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. I was debating whether or not to put both Gauntlet and Gauntlet Legends here on this list. But I decided to go and put Gauntlet on there because I felt that... Believe it or not, the graphical overhaul between the original Gauntlet and Gauntlet Legends is insane.
The original, I'm not usually one to harp on graphics, but the original Gauntlet does not do itself any favors, especially if you play any of the home ports ported by Tengen.
Yeah.
On the NES, Gauntlet Legends basically has had the same formula. Gauntlet has gone with that formula and based all of the decisions off of Gauntlet Legends. Mm-hmm. Let's see. All right, so now we're getting into some real bruisers. At 29, we have Typing of the Dead. 28, we have Super Mario World. At 27, we have Super Street Fighter 2. At 26, we have DuckTales. At 25, we have Donkey Kong. At 24, we have NBA Street Volume 2. At 23, we have Panzer Dragoon Orta. At 22, we have Original Pac-Man. At 21, we have Pitfall. And at 20, we have Frogger. Ones folks are probably wondering about are NBA Street Volume 2 and Panzer Dragoon Orta. These games are original titles on the original Xbox. I believe Panzer Dragoon Orta was a exclusive. The Panzer Dragoon series, for folks that may not be completely familiar with it, is based off of is basically a rail shooter where you fly in a giant dragon and shoot shit. Panzer Dragoon Orta is one of the most recent releases for that, and it's very, very good. It basically, you can upscale it to 720p, which, you know, not a lot of the original Xbox games would do that. Mm-hmm. But you know, that so it's very good. NBA Street Volume 2 is arguably the definitive game for arcade style basketball, 3-on-3 basketball. It's so fun. It has a story mode that's built into it. The gameplay is ingenious. If you get hot in this game, there's something called game breakers. When you make one, you gain that many points of the shot plus 1 point, and your opponents lose X amount of points. So there are times when you play with people, it has a nice little, sports games need more control-based elements. That's one of them. Of course, a lot of these games speak for themselves. Typing of the Dead is the best edutainment game of all time, hands down. I will fight anybody to the death about that. It teaches you to type. It encourages you to type. And it has very cheesy gameplay, which is fantastic and exactly what you want in your edutainment game. I will fight anybody to death about Typing of the Dead being the best edutainment game of all time.
So long after man has gone and died and we've moved on to different civilizations and, you know, the Skynet has assimilated us and everything else and you know, the universe has collapsed. Eventually somebody from somewhere, from some other galaxy is going to come upon our written history. And most of it's going to make sense. The only thing that's not going to make sense is the naming scheme for the entire fucking Street Fighter series. Because, again, like, you have no idea, like, where Super Street Fighter 2 comes in at. So is this, like, the number 2 of Super Street Fighter? Or, no, this is, like, Street Fighter 2, but a super version of it. And where does that compare to Street Fighter Alpha 3? And so, I mean, that's just going to be, we can just have, like, it'll be a puzzle that's where, you know, when we want aliens to figure it out, they've got to figure out the naming and just put it in order, and then they'll never get to our key things, because it's just confusing as shit.
Yeah, so Super Street Fighter 2 it's after Turbo and before Alpha. Okay, I will say, is Alpha 3 the first one? That? Oh my god, yeah, now I'm confused.
Exactly. I mean, so I think Super Street Fighter 2, is that the one that introduces, like, Cammy and yes, is DJ, it DJ Baylor. Thunderhawk or whatever? I forget.
T-Hawk? I fucking hate T-Hawk. T-Hawk,
okay,
man.
Yeah. and his jumping knee and his diving little bird dive. But yeah, so, I mean, that's what, knowing some of the characters there, but again, where it fits into the scheme, I don't remember.
Yep, so it goes Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Turbo, then it goes Street Fighter 2 Champions Edition,
which is a Sega Genesis exclusive. Then it goes Super Street Fighter 2, which is on both systems. And then I think it goes Alpha. And then Alpha 2. And then 3. I think 3 is on the PlayStation. I think 2 is on the Super Nintendo. But that basically ends up being Super Street Fighter 2, I think, is the best version of Street Fighter 2. Not comparing to that new crap that just came out a few years ago. Those don't count. They're actually known for being fucking impossible.
You mean the ones I buy, come home, play, and then turn around and be like, nope, we're taking this back.
Yep, exactly. And then we've got, of course, Pitfall and Frogger. All these games in this section basically speak for themselves, too. DuckTales is arguably one of the best platformers on the original NES. It also has fantastic music, great visuals, and it feels like you're playing a cartoon. Mm-hmm. The moon theme from this game has been remixed through all 8-bit music throughout, basically, go to say, and it's going to be mixed through till the end of time. When we're taken over by Skynet and the aliens are trying to figure out this order of the Street Fighter games, they're probably going to find many mixes involving the moon theme from the first DuckTales, listening to it and being like, why did they all like this song so much?
I mean, that was the NES game that no matter what friend's house we went over, like, we all had different copies of it, but it didn't matter. Like, that was the game that we were playing everywhere we went. Like, it didn't matter if I just played that at my house before, like, we came over, or at a friend's house or relative's house or whatever. Like, we were popping in DuckTales and playing that no matter what, no matter where. And it was one of the better ones.
Yep. I just realized I didn't even put a couple games on this list that I should have. We'll fix it in post. So at number 19, we have Pokemon Red, Blue, / Yellow. At number 18, we have Mass Effect 2. At number 17, we have Pole Position. At number 16, we have Knights of the Old Republic. At number 15, we have Final Fantasy 6. At number 14, we have Pong. At number 13, we have Resident Evil 4. At number 12, we have Robotron 2084. And at number 11, we have The Simpsons Arcade. I realize I forgot to put Outrun on here, and that's probably just going to take that place of that second Tecmo Bowl. And that pretty much will be that. So all of these, that whole stack from 19 to 11, arguably genre definers.
Absolutely.
I mean, some people may go, why do you have Pong so high? Pong came out.
I mean, we wouldn't be here without Pong. Like, I mean, that's just like, I mean, yeah. if that wasn't a concept and execution, then, I mean, just the rest of it wouldn't have happened.
Not only that, but the fact that you can still, it's been 50 some odd years, you can still pick up and play Pong now and have fun. Mm-hmm. Like, some folks may not understand that or realize how powerful that is. You can still pick up Pong today and play it for 30 minutes and have a fantastic time. I had a arcade classics collection on the Genesis. I played with somebody that had a version of Pong on it. We played it for 25, 30 minutes.
I mean, there's a reason why they have that in tabletop bars where you just, you know, sit down, get drinks, and that's what you're playing for a couple hours while you're drinking.
Yep. KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic, Final Fantasy VI, you know, those games are all definitive, you know, Pokemon definitive.
Pole Position, the same as kind of doing what Afterburner did for Flight Sims, but Pole Position was like the original driving game where, you know, you had no idea what low high meant, but you were there jamming the pedals, spinning the wheel and switching between low gear and high gear and spinning out and blowing up. But, you know, you get a map of one of the tracks flashed into your kind of peripheral vision for Pole Position, and like, you know exactly you know what, where you're racing, what you're going, and kind of what the screen looked like when you're going around those tracks. Still there?
Yeah, sorry. I went through that whole damn list. I had the mic.
All right. Okay.
So as I was saying, we're at the final 10 now. I shared this final 10 with someone who basically told me I was insane. And that I've been tasting games was too many old games. It's like, well, these games are all very important and they're all very good. At number 10, we have Snatcher. At number 9, we have Pokemon Gold Silver. At number 8, we have Sonic 3. At number 7, we have Space Harrier. At number 6, we have Ms. Pac-Man. At number 5, we have Space Invaders. At number 4, we have Super Castlevania 4. At number 3, we have Tempest. At number 2, we have Tetris. And at number 1, we have Super Mario Bros. 3. So probably touch a couple games here that people are going, what the fuck, why is this here? First one being Snatcher. I know a lot of people are not familiar with this game, especially why do you think it's in the top 10 of all time? This game was made by Hideo Kojima.
Okay.
All the storytelling stuff that people love in Metal Gear, he learned how to do that shit in Snatcher. Snatcher is basically a visual novel where you play as a cop investigating crimes. It has a sequel titled Police Nuts that's available on the PlayStation. But that was a Japanese exclusive only. Snatcher is a fantastic game. It's the adventure visual novel and shows Kojima in his storytelling prime. The fact that game is so important, and it was the first game, if you're looking at like retro games, mm-hmm. or whatever, it's one of the first retro games that on a regular console that was telling you a hard, compelling story. It is so important, and it has so much influence that a lot of people don't necessarily see because they're not familiar with it and because it's on the Sega CD and it's like $300. So,
all good reasons.
So, like, it's super important. I'm someone who still plays games and who enjoys modern games, but I understand the history of that game. I have Pokemon Gold Silver here. You're probably going, why is there three Pokemon games here? Short answer is they're all basically all groundbreaking or definitive versions of the game. Pokemon Gold Silver basically changed the entire post-game content for how to basically approach post-game content. For and what you could basically do on a Game Boy cartridge. The fact that they programmed the entire map of the first game into the second game, which is a programming feat in itself. plus had the map for the second game of the second game in the second game, totally changed how to approach post-game content. The fact that was all available and all given away at that time, I'm trying to think of any RPGs sort of had, like secret bosses or whatever for the playthroughs. But I'm trying to think of how many at that time that game would have came out in Japan in like 1999. How many at that time completely opened up a whole nother world post-game content. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as long and not as in depth as the first game, but it's there. Sonic 3, I had to put a Sonic on this list. Sonic CD is actually the definitive version of a Sonic, but Sonic 3 is pretty damn close. We have Space Harrier. Space Harrier captures everything about arcade games for me that it's supposed to capture. Quick, easy to pick up, hard to master,
really fun, really addicting. We have Miss Pac-Man here at number six. Super, I mean, it's fucking Miss Pac-Man.
Yeah, exactly. Hands down.
if some people say, Miss Pac-Man, what's that? Who cares? You're nuts. At number five, we have had Space Invaders here. I mean, it's fucking Space Invaders. The game that's so good without wanting to be good, where a programming error made the game better.
Okay.
Like, how nuts is that? Because the systems couldn't handle the the technology at the time couldn't handle the number of sprites basically on screen. It moved slower when there were more sprites on screen, and as you took sprites away, it moved faster.
Oh, okay.
So the fact that you had this iconic game that came like, oh my god, the whole entire game was just birthed out of that. So nuts, very good. And the game's so popular that it caused a yen shortage in Japan.
Oh, wow. I had no idea about that one.
Yeah. I mean, there's something there with Space Invaders. Nowadays, we look at Space Invaders and don't see too much. But the game's there, and, like, it's super important. It's fun. It's super important, and it's fun, and it has its place in gaming history, so it's got to be up towards the top. Mm-hmm. And then we have Super Castlevania here, Super Castlevania 4. At four, I have that game here, pretty high here because I believe it's the best remake, it's probably done to this day. It's a remake of the first Castlevania, and it makes small tweaks to the gameplay that totally changes how you play the game. Mm-hmm. You have an omnidirectional whip. And like you go from the thing with Castlevania games, at least the platformers, very stiff. They all feel very stiff. In Super Castlevania 4, your whip can move in any direction and you can do fucking backflips.
Yeah, I mean the kind of the mold breaking for that one is definitely refreshing as needed in the Castlevania series, because again, it was basically you had the eight directional whip or eight directional whatever you were using, and it really wasn't that much. It got you into situations where it was very forced, or you knew you were doing that because you only had the eight directional pieces. But having the omnidirectional piece ended up being something that was very much a whole new experience.
Yes, and. Like, it's like, if you're going to do a remake, that's how you do it. I mean, you got to put the best remake of all time in the top 10 mm-hmm. of all time. So, number three, we have Tempest. If folks haven't played Tempest, you need to play Tempest. Tempest is like Civ in that way where it's strangely addictive. Mm-hmm. And it makes you think that Tempest has to be made of pure Colombian cocaine.
What platform is it on?
What isn't it on? Tempest is originally an arcade game. You can find ports of Tempest on the 3DO. The Atari Jaguar. I think I have it in a Game Boy Advance collection of like arcade games.
Okay.
Tempest is out there, man. it's so fun. It's so, it's basically it's a shooter. But instead of, you moving your ship to, it's done in 360 degrees. So, you basically swirl your ship around to shoot all the bad guys done in like light vector graphics. It's just, I mean, it's so good. It's so simple and it's so addicting. If you haven't played Tempest, check it out. And make sure you play it on something where you can feel good moving 360 degrees. Mm-hmm. Like that's a game that you play with a paddle control and you just, you know.
Yeah. It's not going to have any fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We have Tetris. Now, as some people say, Tetris is stupid, or, you know, what's the point of Tetris?
Any game addictive enough to bring down the Iron Curtain?
I mean, if there's no Tetris, we don't have Candy Crush, we don't have any of the Match 3 games that are out there today. I mean, there's, like, that is, again, like, a genre-defining, you know, mental, global, reorienting type game that's so simple in nature, but so powerful, similar to, you know, Space Invaders and Pong. So I have no arguments with that one.
And of course, we have Super Mario Bros. 3 at number one. Some folks go, you know, why have this at number one? We've got it. I've got it here because it basically redefined how we kind of had platformers. The fact that it pulled so much what it pulled out of the NES's hardware. The fact that this game is so iconic and so good and is still playable to today. You know, so much so, and Nintendo believes this game is so playable today that you can play this game on almost every single Nintendo system from the NES4. Mm-hmm. You know, it's getting a re-release on Switch in September.
Nice.
When it comes out with the online stuff, you can play it on everyone. You can play it on their handheld. You can play it on GBA. You can play it on the Wii. You can play it on the Super Nintendo. You can play it on the original Nintendo. You can play it on the DS. Like, you can play this game and everything because it has that much staying power. It's such an easy, good pickup and play game that was so iconic and so fun and so addicting. Just because if you get good at this game, you can beat it in 30 minutes or 15 minutes if you use the warp whistles or whatever, it doesn't make it any less of a game.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, all that means is there's gameplay elements that you're missing out on explicitly, but there's still elements of the game that you can use to take advantage of it for speed runs. But there's still so much more value to the game of actually playing through it and hitting all of the points in there.
Yep. And it's so good. It plays so smooth. And it's, oh my God. I play Super Mario Bros. 3. At least I don't play it through to completion, but I touch it probably every 6 months.
Okay.
Just because it's because of how easy it, how accessible it is, and how I have so many copies, I can play it on so many different systems. I mean, it's there. It redefined how we approached, kind of how we approached platformers from there on out. So, I mean, it's got to be there. It's got to be, you know, the best. I mean, God, I'm trying to think what was on the Game Informer list. They had number what was Link to the Past, but I mean, I think it did more for games than Link to the Past did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I 100% would agree. I mean, I don't have any argument there. So, I mean, there's once we get into the top end of this list, it's a lot of just shuffling. But as far as the top 10, I've got no complaints for, you know, what the kind of where we are today, where some of the genres have gone and kind of what they pulled from all of these games there. So that's a perfectly fine top 10 for me.
Yeah, and I think what's important to note, too, is that those games are all still fun to play. You know, and that's like the big thing. I mean, I couldn't imagine. I think what makes a game in itself is sort of the brevity of the game. You know, yes, you can have these really in-depth, complex games, but you don't get enjoyment out of the game. You don't get enjoyment out of the length necessarily. You get enjoyment out of the action. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are RPGs, as I said, there are in-depth RPGs on this list, and some of them are pretty high, too. But you kind of just like the idea of, you know, there's something about the shortness that is childlike in a way.
To pick it up, because the playability goes a long way for all of these games.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the list. I mean, we'll probably, I can't believe I didn't put Outrun on there. It's going to be that second. It was on here. I swear to God, I put it on here, but in and out of six different things, I probably typed over something.
Well, I mean, I think we've hit our longest episode to date, so that's not a problem. We don't need any postmortems here, but then take a breath, check out where Outrun comes. We'll get this posted, and then we can do some Fallout discussions next week. So,
yep. All right, that's it.
Listen carefully.